We spend the hour with an author, a Wisconsin children's author, writing about his personal heroes, breaking down complex subjects in ways that young readers can relate to. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. His stories cut to the heart of emotional moments that led to their hero's success, like in the case of Dr. Jonas Salk, who discovered the polio vaccine. He saw children suffering and wanted to end it. Join in with the children's author. What picture book speaks to your young one? 800-642-1234. Dean Robbins is a Madison-based writer of 8 children's books to date, 4 released over the past year. Latest one is called You Are a Star, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Dean, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And I just want to start by acknowledging Uvalde because of all the children. Gun violence has killed more kids, and I don't expect you to have answers, but as someone who writes for young people, how should we think about this moment? How do we talk about school mass shootings, and how do we explain this to our kids?
Well, I think definitely not in children's books. I think, you know, younger elementary school kids, the kind that I write for, you know, they're innocent, they're fragile. In my books, I certainly don't want to scare them or discourage them. So, you know, I'm certainly no expert, but I think that discussion has to go on outside the realm of children's books.
Outside the development of children's books. And I'm wondering, you know, when you look at your writing of nonfiction for children, why do you choose this audience? Because you could speak to an adult audience.
Yeah, well, I've been a journalist, and I have spoken to the adult audience, and I grew up with a pantheon of heroes, and I never really grew out of that. I started off wanting to be like Batman and Superman, and then I moved on to real-life heroes like Houdini and Jackie Robinson and Louis Armstrong, and I read everything I could about them, and I had their pictures up on my wall, and I do that to this day. I've still got the same pictures on my wall, and I read everything, you know, that comes out new about my heroes. And they just feel like family members to me. And I was able to write about some of them in my career as a journalist. Well, then when I had a son and he got to be about 4 or 5 years old, I started telling him stories about some of my favorite heroes. And I was gratified by how powerfully he responded to that. And they became his heroes, too, and even started putting their pictures up on his wall in his bedroom. And I realized how fun it would be to do that on a grand scale and write about these people in nonfiction children's books and maybe, you know, inspire a whole new generation.
I would imagine that it sounds like you really love to do research and you really love to study up on these people. How do you make sure that the information that you're putting into your books is accurate as you kind of distill it down for a young audience?
Well, as a journalist, research is my happy place. So that's the fun part for me, is just throwing myself into a subject, reading everything I can about it. With Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for example, I read all the biographies, all the children's biographies, listened to her speeches, read some of her opinions. And at that point, you know, her voice starts resonating in your head. And there's this mysterious point where you feel like you've done enough research and a structure starts to form and an approach and a tone starts to form and maybe some first lines come into your head. And then, you know, with luck, you start writing and it all flows out in just one beautiful, simple piece. As you can imagine, that often doesn't happen. It's more of a struggle to grapple with the material and find just the perfectly simple form for kids in a way that they can understand, but that will also, you know, tell a story that will engage them. Mm-hmm. But either way, if it's, you know, if it comes out automatically or if it's a struggle, I find that a really fun challenge.
I wonder, when you begin writing a children's book, like you say, you had Ruth Bader Ginsburg in your head. Did you know at the outset what the ending of the book would be, or did you not know when you started writing it?
Well, I generally try to think of the ending first.
Uh-huh.
I find
okay.
it easier to work toward a goal like that.
Uh-huh.
To me, the goal in writing You Are a Star, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, was to bring kids close to her and make them understand on a really basic level how profound her achievement was. And when I read all the other children's books out there, and there are a lot, I thought that there was an opening for something that was more irreverent and more playful, something that brought out her sense of humor and some of her eccentricities, because a lot of the books that are out there tend to be kind of earnest and straightforward. So my editor at Scholastic and I cooked up a structure that's kind of unusual with sidebars and two-panel comics on every spread. So as the main story is unspooling, I can put all these fun little known details into the sidebars and the comics and hopefully, surprise adults even who know a lot about Ruth and delight the children readers.
I'm laughing about that one image of her in the bathtub with all these books, like just stacked up in a bathtub because she was trying to, I guess, find someplace quiet.
Yes. Yeah. And that actually, it's funny, but it makes a point too, because in Ruth's day, women weren't, if they went to college at all, they weren't supposed to study hard. But Ruth was determined to do well academically, and she was looking for the quietest place she could find to study, and that got to be the bathtub. So she would just stack up all the books in the bathtub and nobody would bother her.
Dean Robbins with us, author of children's books about real people who've made their mark on American history. You can join in with your questions, your insights on children's books, or an idea for a book that you have. 800-642-1234. So, Dean, as we talk about the Eurostar, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what did you want kids to learn about RBG? What did you really want them to take away?
Well, the keynote of the book is Ruth fighting discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
When she was a girl, she experienced discrimination. As a girl and a woman at that time, a lot of women didn't have careers. There were lots of barriers for them to having careers. So it's really about her opening doors in the legal profession for women and then fighting for rights for everybody, making the laws fair for everyone in our country, particularly marginalized groups.
I particularly like the additions you put in about bathrooms and just the effort to be able to show discrimination. You were able to show that via bathrooms and just, what she had to go through in order just to use the restroom.
Yeah, believe it or not, at her college, when she was in law school, that is, there wasn't even a woman's restroom in her law school. So when she had to go to the bathroom, she had to run out of the building to look for a place to go to the bathroom. So I think, that's a concrete example that I think makes kids feel the unfairness. There's a lot of abstract concepts when you're telling the Ruth Bader Ginsburg story. What is law? What is discrimination? What is inequality? I think those are hard ideas for younger children to grasp. So the key is to try to explain things in a way that will really engage them. And I know kids do have a strong sense of what's fair and what's not fair. So hopefully those concrete details serve that purpose.
We're talking about children's books with Madison-based author Dean Robbins, who writes about historical figures. Join in with your favorite children's books, your ideas for ones, your heroes from history, questions for a children's author, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dean Robbins here on the Ideas Network. We're spending time with Wisconsin's children's author here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dean Robbins, his recent works explore figures from American history, as we've been talking about the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, American stuntwoman Kitty O'Neill, haven't talked about her yet, Dr. Jonas Salk, the polio vaccine inventor, another subject. Robbins calls them real-life heroes. Join in with your questions for a children's author. What you want to know about the process, the illustrating, the book publishing industry, 800-642-1234. Dean Robbins with us for the hour. So, one children's author told us once here on our show that because picture books have such an economy of words that they have to really sweat and labor over every word in the book. And I'm wondering if you feel that pressure to deliver on every word like that.
Yeah, you know, they have to be effortlessly simple, and simplicity is really not that simple to achieve. Especially because you want it in nonfiction picture books, explain the subject on a basic level, but you don't want them to be, or at least I don't want them to be, just information delivery vehicles, you know, like Wikipedia entries for kids. So the trick is to just embed the information in a story. You know, the essence of storytelling is making people want to turn the pages. If you're just bogged down with information, that's not going to happen. You know, you'll lose kids immediately. So what I try to do is tell a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end that's perfectly simple and that explains the concepts as you go along, but not in too heavy-handed of a way.
Something that keeps us lingering on pages is the illustrations. How do you work with illustrators?
Well, that's really one of the most satisfying parts of this, because as you're writing the story, you're seeing it unspool in your head, but I don't have the world's greatest visual imagination. So it's always such a wonderful surprise when you see what the illustrators have come up with. And I've been lucky to work with great illustrators. For example, Sarah Green, who illustrated You Are a Star, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, just made the story come alive in ways that I could have never imagined. She had to render this wide range of moods and scenes, from farcical to poignant to dramatic. She came up with all sorts of creative solutions. For example, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a child, she loves to sing, and she loves to sing opera, but she's a terrible singer. And so how do you render that on the page? You know, you could have a picture of a woman singing, but that doesn't look like she's a bad singer. So Sarah's solution was to have her with her eyes closed, and she's transported in song, but all these broken notes are wafting in an ugly way across the page, and other people are standing around holding their ears. And yeah, that's a pretty good solution to how to show that someone's a terrible singer.
Do you ever change your words in order to better help an illustration, or is there any type of synergy there with your wordplay?
Yeah, it is a collaboration. I get to see the sketches, and then I get to weigh in on them, and sometimes the illustrator will change what they've done, or I'll change my words to better fit the illustration. That is a really gratifying part of the process.
And
I put notes into the text to give an illustrator a sense of what I'm visualizing, because it's not always that obvious in the words. And with Sarah, for You Are a Star, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, since I wanted there to be a lot of humor in the book, I was just, you know, kind of reduced to saying, make this funny, which I know was not helpful at all. But luckily, she took the cue and came up with some amazingly funny stuff.
Well, since we're talking about feedback, how do you treat feedback from children? I mean, on the one hand, they're much less experienced writers, less worldly. On the other hand, they're your prime audience. So I would imagine you really need to hear out their critiques.
Well, I do a lot of presentations in schools, and it's the best possible market research you could do, because, you know, kids aren't going to spare your feelings. If there's something that they're bored by that loses them, they're going to drift off, and you know immediately that you don't have their attention anymore. So that's been incredibly valuable to me. When I was doing my very first presentations for my book, Two Friends, which is about the little-known friendship between Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass, and I was going to schools for the first time, I had a very earnest presentation that told them all about Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass. And on this one tour, I was paired with another author. And while I was talking, you know, about all this important historical stuff, and I saw the kids were starting to drift off, my fellow author got up and showed all these funny pictures of sloths hanging from trees. And the kids were laughing uproariously and rolling around on the gym floor. And I thought, you know what? It's going to be the equivalent of sloths hanging from trees for me from now on. And then you just, you know, you try to fit the learning in around the edges.
Oh, I love that. I love that story. You know, and you've worked with a number of different publishers now. So I would imagine that, too, is a bit of a learning curve to understand what the publisher is after.
Yeah, I, you know, as a lifelong editor and journalist, I love the editor-writer relationship. And it's just so fun to be on the other side of it, since I've mostly been an editor, to get feedback from editors. And all the people I've worked with in New York publishing are just so talented. So, yeah, that's a great part of it.
Talking with Dean Robbins, Madison resident, author of children's books about interesting and important people in American history. We're picking his brain. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dean, is there something that you do regularly that helps you become a better children's writer?
Well, ever since I was little, I've just loved to read and to write. Mm. So that's most of it. I'm an obsessive reader. Ever since I was when I started school in kindergarten, our teacher read us Dr. Seuss, and it was just such a formative moment for me just to get a glimpse of a writer's wild imagination and just see that the world was so much more complicated and fun than you could have imagined. So that set me on a lifelong course of trying to read and trying to write. And it just kind of serves as therapy for me. You know, like when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, for example, I felt bad about that, like a lot of people did. And, you know, my solution is to just, you know, start reading about her as much as I possibly can.
When I'm thinking about Dr. Seuss, though, I think of the rhyming, and your books don't have any rhyming. Is that something that you've toyed with, or, you know, how do you feel about rhyming?
You know, I love rhyming books, and, you know, so you said there were 8 books of mine published out there, which is true, but on my computer are literally hundreds of others that have not been published.
Wow.
And some of them are fictional books that have rhymes in them, so maybe one day those will see the light of day.
Wait a minute. So you really are holding on to hundreds of manuscripts that haven't been published yet?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I guess it's a personality flaw, but I'm just a compulsive writer. And, you know, I never feel like, even though none of these books are going to get published, there's obviously not going to be hundreds of Dean Robbins books out there. I never feel like I've wasted my time after I've written a story and it's sort of complete to my satisfaction. There's just something so innately satisfying about that kind of self-expression.
So how do you deal with rejection then? You know, when a publisher says, no, we don't want that, or maybe later, how do you deal with that as a writer?
Well, you know, I started out in children's publishing with a book about Babe Ruth, who was another one of my childhood heroes. And I sent it off. I tried to find an original take on this story and sent it off to this publisher, Harcourt. And they accepted it immediately and asked me if I had other ideas for children's books. And of course, I had all these other heroes and all these other people with pictures on my wall. And so I immediately wrote a book about Louis Armstrong and then another one about Jackie Robinson. And they accepted those too. And I thought, wow, writing children's books is the easiest thing in the world. And I told all my friends that I was going to be a published children's author. And I imagined my little son going to the Borders bookshop by my house and listening to one of my readings. And guess what? It turned out that it wasn't that easy after all. Harcourt was bought out by Houghton Mifflin, and the people that had liked my books were leaving the company. And suddenly they weren't returning my calls anymore or my emails. And it slowly dawned on me that, oh, these books aren't ever going to be published here. So that was a huge blast of rejection. And I've always been inspired by a Babe Ruth quote. He said, it's very hard to beat somebody who never gives up. Mm. And so I took that to heart with children's books, and I kept writing, and I tried to find an agent. And it was years and years and years of rejection after what seemed like it was going to be, you know, a fantastic career as a children's author. In the meantime, the Borders bookshop by my house closed. Mm. My son grew up to be a jaded teenager who wouldn't be caught dead at a children's book reading. And my friends just all thought I was delusional talking about being a children's author when there was no evidence of any children's books coming out. Finally, I found an agent and I sold a book and things started rolling, and it turned out that Babe Ruth's philosophy was true.
Madison author Dean Robbins, our guide into the world of children's book publishing and his journey through it, author of 8 books at the moment about the life of famous and less known figures throughout American history. Join in with your thoughts on children's books and writing, 800-642-1234. We'll talk more about children's books after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Children's books, they hold space for creativity and imagination. We're picking the brain of a Madison-based children's author on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dean Robbins helps young readers put historical figures from American history into focus. And his next nonfiction book on a scientific trailblazer is about renowned primatologist Jane Goodall. That's set to come out next year. Join in on the writing process, aspiring to write for young audiences, what it takes, what to do about writer's block, 800-642-1234. Dean Robbins, author of 8 children's books now, with us for the hour. Let's bring in Sarah in Madison. Sarah, hi. What would you like to ask Dean?
Oh, hi. I was just curious for if he had any kind of recommendations or tips for people who are kind of interested in getting into the field of, you know, children's books writing, and, you know, maybe how to go about that and maybe making connections with publishers or other, you know, illustrators to kind of start that process.
How to break in. Sarah, thank you. Dean.
Sure. Hi, Sarah. There's something called the Society for Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, which is a really good organization to be part of. I think there's a Wisconsin chapter, too. You can meet with fellow authors and get tips. I think that reading everything you possibly can is the best way to start. Read every children's book that interests you and get a sense of the state of the art. And try to follow your models. You know, I mentioned Dr. Seuss earlier. Just try to figure out how they make magic and develop your own writing, which can be just such a satisfying pursuit, even if you don't ever get published.
Sarah, how do you pursue writing? What have you been working on?
It's just mostly like little short stories. And, you know, I have 2 children, 1 middle school, 1 elementary, but, you know, growing up, they always wanted to hear some stories, right? So I would just kind of make up stories about different things as far as, you know, events throughout the day, you know, parts of nature we see on a walk, you know, different kind of things. And so kind of making, like he mentioned, you know, making it fun and relatable. And I thought, well, this might be a good opportunity to kind of put it in print and, you know, see how that goes. So I really haven't, you know, done a whole lot of, detailed work. So just kind of more in the research, trying to determine next steps.
Yeah. Sarah, thank you for that. You know, Dean, just prompts in her life to make up stories for her own kids. And it sounds like that might be also a really great way to get started in writing.
Yeah, that's exactly how I started, as I was saying, just telling stories to my child. And you see immediately what interests them and what doesn't. And you can refine your craft just by talking to kids.
Do you believe in writer's block?
I've heard that it exists. I mentioned that I was a compulsive writer. I've been lucky never to have that problem. Mm. You know, I've certainly struggled with stories, and you know, some of those hundreds of stories that are on my computer are abandoned ones that I really couldn't make work to my satisfaction. But to me, writer's block is something you defy by just jumping in and reading and writing some more. You know, at the very least, you can, you know, rewrite something that one of your favorite authors has written, and that can often break the logjam.
Hmm. Oh my goodness, rewriting one of your favorite authors. Have you done that before?
Yeah, just writing down a sentence just to see how the magic works, you know, just to see how the prose feels in your knuckles as you're writing it down. I think that can be a really beneficial exercise.
Interesting. Let's go to Mona now in Madison. Mona, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. I'm wondering if you've ever written or how you would deal with writing about a sad or controversial figure in American history. I'm thinking something like Ira Hayes or John Lewis. How would you deal with that?
Well, I guess you'd have to start by figuring out what, for this young elementary school audience, what is the inspiring part about what they did? You know, if they're too controversial, you don't want to sweep things under the rug. I think the key is to figure out what's inspiring about their story, what's hopeful, and focus on that without whitewashing it. And it's certainly a tricky process, and you might get started and feel like, I really can't tell this particular story because there's too much I have to ignore.
Well, that brings up to me Mambo Mucho Mambo, the dance that crossed color lines. There is a lot of tension there about discrimination in America, and yet you can see how that plays out on each page in a way that might be more relatable. Do you see something there?
Yeah, so that story is about a time when terrible segregation was happening in our country. It was in the 1940s. And that's a painful, horrible subject. But in this case, the story is about, so one of the places where segregation existed was in dance clubs. And in New York City, Italians tended to have to dance in one place in their own neighborhoods, and Black people in another place, and Puerto Ricans in another place, and Jews in another place. And so this place called the Palladium Ballroom in New York City decided to bravely open its doors so that all people could dance in the same place. And they all came together to listen to this new music called Latin jazz and to dance this creative new dance called the Mambo. So here's a story about people defying segregation through music and dance, which I think be such a celebratory way to deal with this painful subject of discrimination and segregation. So that's how that book handled it.
And it was also a vehicle into your love, Latin jazz, I understand.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a huge jazz fan. I played the trumpet when I was younger, and I've written so many books about music, none of which had ever been published. And it was so fun to get one out there about music and just the redemptive quality that music and dance can often have.
I would imagine you were listening to music as you were writing the book.
Definitely before and after. I could not listen to anything while I'm writing. That's the sort of the sacred time where you're just in your head and letting the sentences roll around. I know some people can do that, but I absolutely can't conceive of how they do that.
I am with you there. I cannot listen to music when I'm writing. Just cannot. I can't, you know, I mean, if you would put a podcast on or even just classical music, I would love to be able to listen to classical and write at the same time. I can't do it. I just can't. Is that just like a focus thing or a multitasking thing for your brain? Do you think that's what's going on?
I don't know. I know I read once an interview with Camille Paglia, the critic, and she said that she watched football games while she wrote her very complicated, philosophically oriented books. And I just thought, this is a different brain than the one I have. I need absolute crypt-like silence to come up with even a single sentence.
Talking with Dean Robbins, children's book author, Wisconsin-based. You can join in 800-642-1234. How is the pandemic affecting your work as an author?
Well, You know, I have to admit that enforced isolation isn't the worst thing for someone like me who is an introvert and who likes to live in his head. It was just more of a chance to read and to write and to have ideas for books. And, you know, in fact, I had 4 books come out last year. So that's one effect of the pandemic for me. So, you know, as horrible as it was, it wasn't the worst thing for the kind of thing that I tend to do.
You couldn't get into classrooms, though. I would imagine that's been difficult for you to be separated face-to-face from your audiences, from your kids.
Yeah, that shut down for a couple of years, and I did do some virtual presentations, which is absolutely unsatisfying because it's just so fun to get a reaction out of kids, whether it's a laugh or a gasp or just a look of, you know, inquisitiveness and curiosity. And when you're presenting virtually, there's just none of that. And you try to tell a joke and it just, you know, falls into the electronic void. So just lately, I've been getting back to in-person visits, and I think it's been really inspiring for me.
How does it feel for you to read your book, any book, to an audience? Because you're an introvert and you're reading your own words and deciding, you know, where stresses go, where you're going to pause. What is that feeling like?
Well, you know, I once read about Louis Armstrong that he was a shy ham. That he was kind of an introvert himself, but there was something where, when he got on the stage, he was sort of transfigured. And I have found since I started this whole thing with children's books that sort of happened to me. And it's just so fun to get a laugh out of a child. I really love kids, and I just find it so rejuvenating to be around them and just to see their delight in things. Mm. So even as an introvert, I think I've really gotten something out of it.
I appreciate how I was watching one video where you really set up the kids well in explaining what the book is about, but not giving too much away. And I would imagine, too, that you have to think carefully as you even go in front of kids and try to get their attention for the book itself. But you also have to say a few things about the book. How do you think about that time when you're not reading the book and yet you are there for the book?
You know, the main thing that I think about is just how to say things that they will even understand in the slightest. Mm. Because as I was doing my first presentations, I just saw that it was impressed on me again, just how little kids know about the context of anything. Mm. When I was interviewing Margaret Hamilton, who was a pioneering computer scientist who helped get astronauts to the moon for the first time for my book, Margaret and the Moon, she was giving me all sorts of technical information about the computer software that she created for getting, you know, Apollo 11 to the moon. And, you know, I wasn't understanding a word of it. And she was having so much fun because this is what delights her, is, you know, describing all the complicated technical stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be a book for second graders. So, you know, I can't put any of this in there. And I finally asked her, can you describe this in a way that, you know, maybe an elementary school child could understand? And she thought about it for a second and she said, nope, I absolutely can't do that. And of course she couldn't, because, you know, she's getting spaceships to the moon. She's not thinking about how an elementary school child can understand this stuff. And I realized that, oh, that's my job.
That's for you to do.
Yeah. So that's basically what I do, and it's what I do when I do in-person presentations, too.
We're exploring the world of children's books with Madison author Dean Robbins. Writes about figures from American history, some famous like U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, some lesser-known characters like a painter who became an astronaut. Join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dean Robbins here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up our conversation with Dean Robbins now. We're talking about his work as a children's book author, exploring American historical figures. One book called Two Friends is about a visit by Frederick Douglass to the home of Susan B. Anthony. Another one is called The Fastest Girl on Earth. It's about the life of daredevil and stuntwoman, the late Kitty O'Neill. Join in with your questions about writing, the children's book publishing industry, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dean Robbins with us for about 9 more minutes. You were saying about the ability to interview Margaret Hamilton, and just I would imagine that it's really great for you to be able to talk with the subject of your book firsthand and have that firsthand knowledge. And I think that also happened in another one of your books with Alan Bean, the astronaut who painted the moon. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I loved astronauts as a kid. I grew up, you know, when I was a little kid, the moon landing happened, and I had an astronaut scrapbook that I kept, and, you know, astronaut pictures were up on my wall. And so here, years later, I was reading about an Apollo astronaut who had died in the New York Times online, and there was a little sidebar that you could click that said, click here to learn about all the Apollo astronauts who've walked on the moon. And of course, I was going to click on that and read it. And I'm reading through, and I saw the Alan Bean description, and it mentioned that he was also a painter, and he had done paintings of his experience on the moon. And I thought, how had I never heard that before? Hmm. What an interesting story. And I read about it, and it was utterly fascinating. And I thought, well, surely someone's written a children's book about this. But in fact, no one had. So I thought how great it would be to write about the only visual artist who's ever left our planet and brought back a vision, personal vision of what that's like. Well, Alan Bean was still alive. And I thought, could I talk to Alan Bean? It just seemed impossible that I could talk to a real astronaut, one of my heroes. And I worked up the nerve to contact him. I emailed him, and he wrote back almost immediately and said, I'd be happy to help you. And I fainted. I took myself off the floor, and then we interacted, and he read my manuscript, and it was one of the thrills of my life.
What did he think of it?
He liked it, and he corrected a few errors, which I appreciated. Unfortunately, he died before the book came out. Mm. I was so looking forward to handing him a copy of the book and meeting him in person.
Mm. You have another one coming out, this one about Jane Goodall, the same kind of title, You Are a Star. What is this one about in terms of Jane Goodall, the primatologist?
So that is about the pioneering scientist who came up with new ways of observing chimps. Mm-hmm. She lived with them in the wild for extended periods of time. And it's the same kind of approach that You Are a Star, Ruth Bader Ginsburg takes of coming up with lots of humor and little known details. Jane Goodall was also an eccentric person with a great sense of humor. And there's all sorts of funny, engaging stuff that happened to her that I haven't found in children's books, which, like the Ruth Bader Ginsburg ones, I think tend to be more earnest.
Mm-hmm.
So as with the Ginsburg book, there's sidebars and two-panel comics. And I hope, just like with Ruth, that it kind of makes kids feel like this is not just a person on a pedestal, that there's no way they could ever approach or emulate. You know, this is somebody who's a down-to-earth person the way they are. And as with the Ginsburg book, I try to write it in a warm first-person voice that makes readers feel like they're close to Jane.
I hope this one that she can pick up and read and see it. It will be out next April. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I tried to get an interview with her. I contacted her through her organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I'd have some luck the way I did with Alan Bean and Margaret Hamilton. And no luck whatsoever with this one. Turns out Jane Goodall is very hard to get through to.
Do you, this might sound curious, but do you hide any secrets in your books or like Easter eggs at all that only maybe a few people will catch, will figure out or pick up on?
You know, I don't, but the illustrators do.
Ah.
And one of the most amazing experiences I ever had, it was the first book that was published. It was two friends, the story of Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass being friends. And it was about their attempt to, on Susan B. Anthony's part, establish rights for women, and for Frederick Douglass, establish rights for African Americans, and they strategized together to figure out how they could help each other and how they could make this happen. So when I got the illustrations back, I saw that the illustrators had embedded words in everything. There were word, little pieces of words in trees and in leaves and in teacups and everywhere. And this was nothing that came from any of the words that I'd written. But I think the strong suggestion was that Susan B. Anthony's and Frederick Douglass's words and ideas were getting out there and were just traveling everywhere and changing people's minds. And you can just see it by the fact that, you know, words are embedded in every single square inch of this book. And it's so fun to watch kids read it because they're turning it upside down and, you know, turning it every which way to see what these words say. So it becomes a very active experience, you know, the reading experience. That was the most wonderful Easter egg I've ever experienced in my life.
Oh, I really like that. And I like what that means. So, you know, as you sift through those manuscripts in your drawer, or I suppose on the desktop computer, wherever they're stored, you know, are there ones that you keep coming back to and rereading that you really want to get out there?
Well, I mentioned some of the music ones. Louis Armstrong has been my biggest hero ever since I was a kid. And I've written maybe a half dozen what I think are original stories about Louis Armstrong. No one has ever picked up on those. Mambo Mucho Mambo, which was which came out last year, was one that I had written about 10 years ago. And the theme of, you know, defying segregation, I thought was really inspiring for kids, but no publishers ever picked up on it. And so my agent and I moved on to other subjects. Well, time passed and publishers have become much more interested in diverse topics and diverse characters. And, you know, 10 years later, this book came back from the dead and finally got published by Candlewick and made some best of the year list. So that was a really unexpected rejection that turned into an acceptance.
Any You Are a Star books that you're going to keep on this theme, this theme, you know, that you've started there with Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yeah, we're talking right now about two more that I might do, and it's not settled yet, so I can't even say what we're talking about. But it is so satisfying to write the You Are a Star books and to just look for original details and original angles that no one has come up with yet. I think the structure really encourages that kind of approach.
If you could leave us with just some encouraging words for writers out there, those writers like Sarah who just really want to become children's authors.
You know, it's just so fun to tell stories, whether you get them published or not. And it's so fun to improve as a writer, whether you get your stories published or not. But I think if you keep reading and writing and working to improve your craft, and you're simultaneously keeping up with the Society for Children's Book Writers and Illustrators and looking for an agent, you're getting better. I think you really can succeed. Mm-hmm. As I was saying earlier, Babe Ruth said, it's very hard to beat somebody who never gives up.
Dean, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun, Kate.
Dean Robbins, longtime Madison area journalist, author of children's books. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.